Welcome to the Zandbergen Report, where wealth strategies and investment wisdom collide, featuring your distinguished host and certified financial planner, Bart Zandbergen.
Welcome to the Zandbergen Report, a showcase for wealth strategies and investment wisdom that's essential for our evolving world. I'm your host, Bart Zandbergen. With me today, my trusty host and partner, Letitia Birbaum. Letitia, thanks for coming in today.
Thanks for inviting me, Bart.
Of course. Paul, welcome.
I am looking forward to hearing what happened last night. You guys are all smirking about some big party or something you went to. I want to know all the details before we go any further.
We went to it.
Oh, see, that threw them. They weren't ready for that one, folks. It wasn't in their show notes.
Actually, I do have to say, in a summary, we had a great dinner yesterday at a fantastic restaurant, Monarch, and it was by far one of the a great meeting. And why it was a great meeting is because we were there, the wealth managers, their accountant was there, one of our top clients was there, and in addition to that is their estate attorney. And we all had a great dinner, and it was their A-team, and we all came together, and we were talking about this client. We've had this client for a long time, and they were there as well, and it was a fantastic experience. And we had amazing wine.
That's what I wanted to hear. Okay.
All right, Paul, we're going to have our subject today is something that I think is near and dear to your heart.
What is that?
And that is, what keeps you up at night?
Oh.
Are you up late, Paul?
You know, we said this before the show, and I'll summarize quickly. You know, I'm an aging baby boomer. I'm an old ex-hippie here. I never worried about anything. Live for the moment. Be in the moment. Live for today. And so I just followed my own muse through life, and all of a sudden now, oh, I'm not sure I saved enough money. Oh, lucky me, I'm lived to be 90. How am I going to be healthy? All of a sudden, I got all these worries. I never worried about anything.
Well,
that's
uncomfortable
for our generation who grew up thinking it'll all work out. And now we're wondering, will it?
We definitely see that. And there was there's a quote by W.C. Fields that I think you can take to a different meaning, which is, if I knew I was going to live this long, I would have taken better care of myself.
Yeah, really.
And that's not only physically, but that could also be financially.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
No, I see it all the time. My wife still, we're both in our mid-60s, and she'll say, oh, it'll work out. And I said, you know, that was easy when you were 20 or 40 or even 50, but 70, 80, is it all going to just work out magically here? I don't know.
Well, that's what we're here to talk about.
Yeah.
So the first thing that we want to bring up and talk about is budgets and how that affects your whole life, and realizing either you're going to plan about it or you're going to be involved. I know that that's something we talk about with pretty much every client.
And can I ask you one quick question? So you deal with obviously very successful people. Are they used to being told no? You spent enough. That's enough. You followed a budget. Now, come on, live with it. Or at that level, are you just saying, hey, I can do whatever I want to do?
So the answer is no one likes to be told no. I mean, do you like to be told no?
No, I'm just thinking, I just read a big story in, I think it was Rolling Stone, about Johnny Depp, one of the most successful actors of the modern era.
Yep.
Made hundreds of millions of dollars, blew hundreds of millions of dollars, because he simply, nobody tells him no. He wants a yacht, he gets a yacht. He wants another house, he gets another house.
By the way, side note, never tell Letitia no.
no for her.
So, you know, budget is a six-letter word that, as we said, nobody likes to hear.
Yeah.
And we don't, I mean, we may call it expenses, we may call it forecasting. We try not to use the word budget. But, you know, our standard clientele, or what we would call high net worth. And even at that level, it's really not our job to tell our clients what they can do and can't do.
Correct.
But we can show them what the ramifications of their lifestyle or spending will do to them. And we had a great meeting, kind of a come to Jesus meeting, if you will, with a client recently, high net worth of about $25 million. Not working because they don't need to. We've established a family index, which is a return that they need to earn in order to have a wonderful lifestyle, one that they become accustomed to.
And not affecting their principal.
Yeah. And it's not a high number. It's 4%. So that's not that big of a watermark.
It seems doable. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So even with that, they're now 2 years into this new lifestyle with this newfound money. And we ran into a bit of a block. And even though we had established what expenses might be, they got pretty, we'll call it maybe outrageous with their travel, to the tune of close to 200 grand, a little bit less.
Wow.
But the difference is, in their mind, their expense number was set at a certain threshold.
Yeah.
But when we actually started doing all the numbers and analyzing everything, it was substantially more, pretty much double.
Double what they thought. And that's what we find very often, too. And this that's not just for them or for high net worth. I think just about anybody, I spend, whatever it is.
Yeah, I don't spend that much, and then you add it up.
And it's usually, typically, significantly more. And that was definitely the case for them. And the good thing is, caught early enough, and they're still young, they're in their early 50s. It's like, I would say it's like turning a cruise ship. If if you start turning the cruise ship 100 miles before the turn, it's a very gradual turn to get to your final destination. If you have to make a distinct right turn,
you might hit an iceberg.
I think they made a movie about that one. Yeah, right.
That's not good for anyone. So it was just a realization, and to see it the way our process is to expose where all the expenses are, and we work closely with our clients to help them track. And so it's really just a matter of making that gradual turn, kind of cutting back on a few errors. They are not by any means going to have a troublesome life or a life that's not going to be considered less than opulent with what they're doing. But, it's enough of a tweak that will make their lives
But look at the Johnny Depp story. I don't know if you ever had a chance to read that, but check that out. I mean, Johnny, makes now movies that he doesn't want to make because he's got so much debt he's got to pay off.
Yeah.
He's created an indebted, he's become an indentured servant to pay off his debt.
Correct. So I want to give you guys some budgeting basics. Definitely what you're saying, Paul and Bart, is in line with both of those, but I want to give the audience some really nice takeaways. So number one, know what you earn. So if you're still making money and you're still employed, you need to know what that net number is. Second, know what you're spending. So what is the actual amount of money that goes out every month? And then when you're creating your budget, separate the essential from non-essential expenses. So for example, dry cleaning might not be essential, but getting gas in my car is definitely essential. I need to get to the office. And then
it's funny though, what I've had some of those debates with my own self or my own wife.
You justify something?
Yeah.
As essential.
Oh, come on. I can't give that up. Right. I got to have that.
So it might be part of the budget, but you can mark it from essential and non-essential. And then that's how you can at least start. And then sometimes bring down those expenses slowly. And then another takeaway is calculate the difference between what you're actually earning and what you're spending. So the two in the very beginning, that's what we're talking about, a balance sheet. But really, it could be very, very simply done. And then get your expenses in line within your earnings. So this is like what you said, only spend within what you're making. And those are huge takeaways. So if you're not overspending more than what you have, then at the end of the day, then you're going to be, in my mind, you'll be okay.
But we're Americans. We're taught to overspend. I mean, we're encouraged to overspend, right? I mean,
correct. That's why people hire people like us to get them back on track, because sometimes they just want, but at the end of the day, is it essential or not essential?
Can I, one more thing, then I'll shut up.
Are you sure?
I'm not sure, but I was always struck by my parents' generation, the greatest generation, the World War II generation. Those are my parents. And they consistently, because they had gone through the Great Depression, really had seen tough times, most of them.
In my era, that's 2008, the Great Recession.
Yeah, right.
Continue. Mm-hmm.
It scarred them. They constantly lived below their means.
Yeah.
Constantly. When my dad got money, or once, I remember once he won $400 or something on something, he refused to go out and spend it, put it in the bank.
Yeah.
Where most of us go, it's found money, let's go,
Yeah.
That is so typical of that generation. My parents were the same, and almost 99%, 100% of our clients who have, or our clients or our clients' parents, same situation.
Yeah.
Depression era babies.
Right, so how that's changed. Yeah. Now if I found $400, I'm blowing it. I'm more inclined to suddenly want to spend it. My first thought is, I'm going to go pay a bill with this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, and also I wanted to add is when you're putting together your budget, some other key points and takeaways is making sure you have some emergency money on the side. So in case the what ifs happen, it's not just, hey, I'll just put it on my credit card and expense it. But actually having some money aside set away for emergencies. So people always say, you know, 3 to 6 months is ideal in case something happens. You have something to fall back on. And then, Brett, I'm going to keep on going with all of these strategies and tips. Is that okay?
Keep going. Keep going.
So anyways, I always want to say is if you fail to plan, you're planning to fail. So that's something just to kind of keep in the back of your mind when you're talking about your budgeting and having emergency money and having things where you want to be later on if you don't at least start a plan.
Right. I think another thing, now I'm going to add on, yes. Something that we do pretty regularly in our plans is we put in, we call it a miscellaneous expense, but
yes.
it's a reoccurring every 5 year expense. And depending on the person's current net worth and lifestyle expenses, it might be $50,000 every, 5 years. And that could represent a new car, a new roof for the house, new plumbing or whatever it is. But those things come up.
They're life events. They absolutely do come up.
Yeah. You may not use it all in the first 5 year event, but whatever's left you might use in the second, in 10 years. So we think that's super important to make sure it's forecasted.
And when people are, and back to what the topic is what keeps you up at night. People don't think, hey, creating a household budget's going to keep me up at night. Yeah. But thinking in the back of your mind, hey, can I pay my bills? Is this going to, am I going to bounce a check? These are real stresses for people, no matter what level of affluent people are. The reality is everyone struggles at some point with those things.
Well, the client that came in that was spending too much on travel, that was keeping him up at night. I was getting texts in the middle of the night like, I need to see what our budget is, because he was freaking out. So that was a real stay up at night.
Mm-hmm. Somebody else tweeted in a question. I was thinking the same thing here. I've seen this happen. The more you make, the more you spend. You think, I'm going to get ahead. I'm going to make some more money this year. And all you do is just up your expenses, your whole lifestyle.
We see that a lot, and I think the remedy for that is a portion of what you make, you always pay yourself first. That is so basic, and it's going to sound super cliche, but you know what? It
so
works.
So good.
You make more. Pick a dollar amount. Pick a percentage. I'm going to put away 10% of whatever I earn. I earn more, 10% of a bigger number is going to be more that I've set aside. And Paul, this is related to both that tweet as well as your earlier comment. I've had a couple of professional athletes as clients over my career. I've read stories about celebrities. They create a lifestyle of an entourage that they're taking care of.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm going to buy my aunt a house and my mom a car.
Yeah.
Because they have so much money.
Put my relatives on the payroll.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
Yes.
That's what Johnny Depp did.
We've seen this.
Yeah.
We have definitely seen this.
Yeah. We've got clients currently who kids are on the payroll, walking around with a client's 80-year-old mom's checkbook or ATM card. It's
these are true stories.
Yeah, it's sad.
Yeah.
So again, the remedy to that is just make sure you set up an amount that you're going to save, even if you're.
So how do you enforce the rule? Because that was the takeaway from Johnny. It wasn't that nobody told him you're blowing your money, Johnny, but he kept saying, "Just I'll make more." I'll just make more. Or I don't want to hear it.
So here's a great... So I learned... This is going to come out funny because I'm young. But I learned early in my career...
Early in my life, I learned.
Right? No, I had some really challenging heart-to-hearts with some clients. And I was maybe a little too honest in the very beginning. Yeah. And I basically said with some clients, hey, you're going to run out of money. You're not going to be able to retire. And you're going to work the rest of your life. And I didn't realize, like... They had known it, but they didn't hear it, and they heard it from someone that was managing their money, and they got, not very happy. But then later on, we had to make some drastic changes, and later on, they appreciated and thanked me, and it was an amazing relationship. And to this day, we still have a lot of respect and chat with each other. And they really said that, I helped change that, which was awesome. But that being said, every single, not every client, but a lot of clients we talk about when we do planning is, all we're doing is discovery, and we're saying, where are you at now? Let's just look and see where you're at now. And then let's see what you think that your expenses are, like what we talked about, knowing what you're bringing in, knowing what you're spending. And then we break it into categories and we just tweak it and we kind of massage it. And then we run analytics and say, okay, let's stress test it. How is that going to look in when you're 90, when you're 95? Mm-hmm. Are you going to run out of money and what does that look like? And then we take it to the next step and say, okay, if we tweak it by this and we have a little bit of savings and we help you with this and we allocate just a dollar, you know, just a certain dollar amount every single month that we're putting in an investment account and we're letting you grow over a period of time, we're making major changes in people's lives and their lifestyle, but we're holding their hand through that process.
Somebody once told me that on a trip to the moon, if you start off and you're off by an inch, by the time you get that far out, you miss by a million miles or something like that.
I think it's similar to my boat reference.
Yeah.
Yeah, but exactly. I like that one better.
Okay.
Oh, I like it.
In our, we will be as accountable to our clients as they want us to be. Mm-hmm. It's, some people may come to us and say, help us, we need to check in. We actually have clients that will call and ask us if they can have some of their money.
can I
it's
spend
true.
Some?
It's so true.
No,
it's true. Or they'll have discussions, and I'm here like, well, we have to ask Barton Letitia before we can do that.
And we budget it out. We analyze it. We'll do the what ifs. You're saying, okay, we do this and this and this. And saying, okay, in an ideal situation, you'll do this amount this year, this amount next year, and then...
But I also think it's somewhat philosophical in the case of Johnny Depp, and I don't know him, I'm not going to make any judgment, to a certain point, you have to take responsibility for yourself. I mean, you can't blame everyone. He probably has advisors that have told him this or that, but at the end of the day, take responsibility.
Or is it to use another movie analogy, since we're in movies here, is it a variation of the famous Jack Nicholson line from A Few Good Men, that you want the truth, you can't handle the truth. I don't know if most people can handle the truth.
I love that.
Yeah.
But I think the way that we present information to people is it's not black or white. We talk about options, we talk about solutions, and we get them to where they want to be in their terms.
I like when you said discovery. I never thought, this is a fun thing. This isn't a nasty thing. This is a fun thing. Let's find out.
It is fun. Because we're going to help them get to where they want to be. And ultimately, they're there for a reason. They want to be there for a reason.
Yeah. So while budgeting, we didn't think would take more than half of the show.
I think it's a huge one. I really do. Yeah. I think I don't know how people... ordinary people, much less wealthy people, really establish budgets unless they have somebody come in and do it for them. I think it's too hard to really sit down and spend the time to ask yourself these questions.
It could be something as simple as literally just entering their credit card information and analyzing the categories of where they're spending the money and how many people use their credit cards for their main form of payment. I know I do.
I'll give you a sad example, but I had a client years ago who had a big company, $100 million company he was part owner of. And I did some marketing for him, some PR, and so he paid me with his credit card like a lot of guys did. And he said to me once, I said something about, gee, I gave you a credit for this, or I didn't charge you for this. And he laughed. He said, you could charge me anything. I never look at the statement. I have no... We charge so many things, he said, I never look at the statement. And I thought, how sad is that? Well, I mean...
That's not uncommon. All right, so we're going to move on to the next subject. And I'm going to stick with the movie theme.
Okay.
I really like that. I am a movies. So Failure to Launch is the next movie. And this is the subject of help launch your kids. And it's, we have quite the list. By the way, I don't think we mentioned, this is going to be an ongoing series. We have several topics, so we'll cover a few today, and then we'll repeat it every month.
Wait, we're also going to have it on our website, and we're going to do little videos as well, and we're going to have it on our social media, including all of these great topics. So if you want to kind of find it other ways, or you want to share good content, also you can search.
Give us the site, and give us a place if people want to suggest a topic.
Yeah, exactly. So you can go to our...
Letitia's the one that rattles all these off here.
Yeah.
So funny. Well, I'm going to have mine, and then I'm also going to have Bart's. But you can always go to our website. It's optivestinc.com. And then under our wealth management team, you can find us and find our individual emails. And you can also go to our social media. So we each have Facebook and we have LinkedIn, and we also have
Instagram.
And mine is Letitia Burbaum, so it's LetitiaBerbaum, my name, and Bart.
I think you spelled Letitia wrong. Say it again here.
It's I think I know how to spell my name.
I know, but I thought you said Letitia.
It's Letitia.
Okay.
Berbaum.
All right.
Thanks, Paul.
I wanted to put a C in there. I always want to put a C in there, like Letitia.
All right. So launching your kids.
Yes.
Believe it or not, this is an issue that spans generations, and it spans classes, and both the high net worth, the non-high net worth. It's an issue.
There's no hiding.
There's no hiding from this one. And I think as time goes on, I think we've had probably cycles of generations where kids will stay at home longer. And we are now in that particular cycle.
Yeah.
Not all, I think, in today's environment, again, to get a little more philosophical, not all the kids' fault. They're graduating from college, in some cases with big student loans.
$100,000.
$100,000, yeah, maybe more. And not able to get a job that fully is commensurate with the education that they have.
Yeah.
So that's an issue.
Right.
Housing prices, and depending on where you live, we live in a pocket where housing prices are very expensive. Mm-hmm. Rent is very expensive. Mm-hmm. So
yep.
there is that. But then there are also the kids that are the professional students, because they're told as long as you're a student, you have a place to stay, you don't have to have a job. So I've run into people who have 8-year college students.
I tried to be one of those until my parents cut me off. I was ready to just keep going forever. Yeah, school was an easy gig.
You are a hippie.
And and that's what made my generation the so-called sandwich generation, because our parents lived longer than we ever expected, and we were expected to take care of them. We wanted to. And at the same time, our kids didn't launch. So we're sandwiched in between these two groups competing for our time, attention, and money here.
The other thing that I've noticed too, generationally, is so Paul, I'm a couple of years behind you, but mm-hmm. Our generation. So Letitia, I don't know if this is going to apply as much to you.
I'm just a couple years behind. What do you mean?
Oh, she's young. She's a baby.
So myself growing up, middle class, maybe even lower middle class, worked for everything. Mm-hmm. Worked for my first car, paid my own insurance, paid mm-hmm. my gas, bought my own shoes. I mean, everything. And I think it's pretty common for our generation. Mm-hmm. And then, so what do? We're going to make a better life for ourselves. We're
going to
make a better life for our kids.
Right.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't say I gave everything to my kids, but they certainly had it easier. And I think right there, and the key word there is entitlement. I mean, how much can you do? And especially, again, where we live, it's such an issue.
I saw it even, I grew up probably more upper middle class. My dad was an executive for Chrysler Corporation. He grew up very poor, very broke, very distressed. And so when he got to a certain point, he decided he was never going to cut grass again in his life. He just thought that was the most demeaning thing. So I grew up never having cut grass in my whole life. I never had to do it. My dad's, and that, I can't say was a good thing.
You're an entitled hippie.
I was an entitled hippie. I just got to go play. Yeah, well, and he took care of these things. I remember when I went to college, my dad said, I'm sorry to tell you the stories, but he said, took me aside, and he said, so you got admitted to the University of Michigan? Yes, I did. Pretty good. How are you going to pay for it? I said, how am I going to pay for it? Look around, Dad. We're doing good. And he made me pay for some of it. I thought it was the meanest thing in the world he ever did to me.
So I'm going to circle back to that. By the way, you know what my grade school job was?
No.
You're cutting grass.
Cutting grass. See? A lot of kids were. Yeah, exactly.
I would cut neighbor's grass.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
So that was, he made up for it later, but earlier on, he spoiled me. He didn't do those things.
And so, There's so
pros and cons to each.
There definitely is. And I mean, being in, well, you're basically my kids' generation, so you may have it a little bit more like my kids, and I'll be interested to see how you're raising your kids and how you're trying to avoid the entitlement, if you are, which I think you are. But one of my clients, who is probably my wealthiest clients, I really like his method and protocol with his kids. Yes, he has money set aside for them, most of which they don't know about. But as they were growing up, he offered the match. You want to buy a car? Go ahead. I'll match you dollar for dollar.
Mm-hmm.
You want a $5,000 car? I'll put in $2,500. You want a $20,000 car? Earn $10,000. I think that was a great, great motivation.
That's what my dad would do with my college. He said, I'll match it. Whatever you earn, I'll match it. Here.
And I think that's a great method.
Yeah, agreed.
What do you do with your kids?
You know, I make the, so they're four, so young. And they're six.
They're not cutting grass yet.
No.
They should be. Those lazy.
No, but I do. My son doesn't love to read at night. Yeah. And so it's really important that he reads every single night. So he does things for a reward. So I give him a coin. I have like a little coin box, and literally I give him money for every single page that he reads. So he's getting money.
Yeah.
He's earning it though. Yeah. And he's learning the value of, you know, he works hard, he gets a reward. So I'm hoping the little, I can do that for him. But then also at the same time, I mean, if he wants a new toy every once in a while, we do that as well.
Yeah.
I think we all do. And that's the problem. You know, that's what you're getting at here is I see this in immigrants to come over here. The first generation scraped to come over here. The second generation, you know, doesn't work quite as hard because by the third generation, it's like, hey, look, we're doing good. They don't have that same hunger burning, and they're not working 20 hours a day.
I want them to have that, though. I want them to have some desire to work hard on their own.
You know, and there's not a manual. I always said, there are books on raising kids, but there is not like the
I'm waiting
book,
for the manual.
The
I'm waiting for the manual.
Manual.
We should write one. Let's write one.
Okay, but we have some really good takeaways to get your kids a job out of college,
okay.
Right?
2 minutes of takeaways.
Here. Okay, I like this takeaways. So key points. In modern, when you're trying to get a job and you're getting your college kids' jobs out of college, things that are important is networking. So they can network with other people. It's about who you know as well. Not you might be qualified, but now there's other candidates out there. So it's networking. And what do I mean by networking? You can be doing that with people on social media. You could be doing that with groups. And people who you actually know that are friends and family, you'd be surprised and just saying, hey, this is what I'm doing. This is what I'm looking for. If anyone knows, let me know. And literally just putting yourself out there and making yourself a little vulnerable can actually go a long way. And then the second one is set your expectations correctly. So what does that mean? You're probably not going to get your dream job job out of college. And it's a little humbling, but knowing that and having the right mindset behind it. And then also, create some type of expenses or budget list. Maybe when you're behind the scenes looking at getting a job, what does that look like? Can the job actually pay your bills, or is this just super fun?
I think that's more for your generation. We've done lots of shows on millennials, and millennials seem to want it faster. You know, I was happy to get any job coming out of college. I got a job in the entertainment industry. I worked in a PR firm. I was happy just to pay. Just to do anything. I didn't expect to be sitting in the boss's chair. Today, you guys are like, hey, come on, it's been a month here. You know.
Well, it's that entitlement. It's that entitlement generation.
Yeah.
Huh. You're going to have to ask me what I'm thinking about right now later.
I can only imagine.
Off the air. It's an off the air thought.
All right.
All right, final thoughts. I know this went fast. You had 100 things you wanted to do, but you're, as usual, we.
So when you're getting ready, make sure you have a strong resume. Make sure you have a good LinkedIn. Your social media. People, we look at your social media. Yeah. We look online. So if you have like party pictures with you and your friends, we are going to judge you on that, okay?
Yeah.
Also is be interview ready. Do mock interviews with your friends and have some good conversations. Have some questions for the people who are interviewing you. Kind of be prepared and kind of figure it out that way and play ideas with other people as well. Yep. So those are some small takeaways. And then last thing, as I'm a really big proponent of, if you have the opportunity to have an internship in college,
huge,
because you get in, you get connections, you get experience, you get exposure, and then you see if you actually like it or not. You're not wasting your time.
I agree. Okay.
So all great stuff. Just as a reminder, everyone, this is the first of a series. We're going to do many, many, many of these of what keep you up at night. Make sure you check out our social media. We're going to be posting on it, little tidbits here and there, little short videos. Check out our website. The two topics today, we're creating a household budget and
getting your kids out of the house.
Hope you launch your kids.
Get them a job.
All right.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Letitia. Thanks for everyone who tuned in. We look forward to being back in the studio next week. Oh, by the way, We have one coming up in a few weeks. It's going to be really great.
Don't miss it.
It's going to be wine pairing and planning for your holiday events.
Now, that's a way to plan. That's a way to plan.
Stay tuned.
Have a great week. Cheers.
Tune in next week for the latest edition of the Zandbergen Report, Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Catch up on our recent shows by visiting bartzandbergen.podbean.com. The Zandbergen Report is also available on iTunes, iHeartRadio, and Spotify. Interested in being a featured guest on our show or have a question you'd like to hear us answer? Email podcast@bartzandbergen.com. Bart A. Zandbergen, CFP, and Letitia Burbaum, AIF, are registered investment advisors with Optivest, Inc., and registered representatives with Gramercy Securities, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advisory services are offered by Optivest, Inc. under SEC registration.